Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast, and I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and I am glad to be here. And thank you all for listening. Now, we are a radio show on Red State Talk Radio. On the weekends, great radio station, and we know the manager well, Scott Adams. And we are also a podcast. You can find us on all known podcast platforms now, pretty much across the board. And actually, I check out three or four on a regular basis. So they're out there. A couple of them is, CastBox? Is that it? CastBox, Podbean, talking to my audio engineer. And iTunes, you name it. Okay, so we are, we've been talking about things related to the phrase, think like a fighter pilot. Now, what we're going to do today, we're not actually going to not do that today, but we're going to take a little bit of a different course of action here. For today. Today it's going to be three short stories. These short stories relate to everything that we're trying to do here with respect to the Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast. And the stories are, they're actually true stories. These are true stories, but they are stories. And I guess you could say that one of the things that I do in my life is that I am a storyteller. I tell stories. If you read my book, The Sonic Warrior, Chronicles of a Top Gun Pioneer, we don't have chapters in that book. We have episodes, and each episode is a standalone story. Now, it is arranged roughly chronologically, but each episode is a standalone story. So what I recommend when you're reading the book, in fact, kind of like, why don't we say this is going to be a story hour for the family? And we get together as a family, and we get off of our digital devices and turn off the television, and we sit around the fireplace or outdoors watching the moonrise, and we tell stories. And each one takes a turn. It could be a single story if one wants to do a long form story. And that brings back that tradition, I guess, of what I'm talking about here is creating a new tradition in with respect to what families do, and I guess I'm doing that right. So that's something that, you know, when I was writing my book, The Sonic Warrior: Chronicles of a Top Gun Pioneer, that's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about story time. I was thinking about story hours. Thinking about telling stories. As a family. Families gathers around, and it could be an extended family, and we tell stories. A great way to express ourselves in a human way amongst a family gathering. Okay, three short stories. Number one is The Perch. That's short story number one. The second story today will be The Last of the Gunfighter. And the third story is The Intellectual Equipment Needed. Okay, that's kind of a, you know, that's not a complete sentence, but that is, hopefully will pique your interest. Okay, so let's start off with The Perch. The Perch. What is The Perch? Now, I'm going to give you two definitions right up front. All right, the perch for a fighter pilot is actually a position in a particular air combat maneuver. It's a starting position in which the one executes a particular air combat maneuver. And this maneuver does require one to have a weapon system that is often called guns. It's actually not exactly that. It's more like cannons that fire ballistic projectiles. And the airplane that I flew, the FA Crusader, we had 4 20-millimeter cannons, and they were monstrous bullets, if you will, but they were cannon shells. Okay, so that's a position. That's a starting position for this particular high-performance air combat maneuver. Now, in the airplanes that I was flying, just to give you some perspective, the airplanes that I was flying, they were all supersonic airplanes. And so this maneuver would require one to fly faster than the speed of sound during a certain portion of the maneuver. Okay, so during a certain portion of the maneuver, you're flying supersonically, hence the term sonic warrior, and hence the term sonic warfare. Okay, did I coin that term? Maybe I did. I'm not exactly sure, but that's okay if I did. I kind of think I did. And what that means is that achieving a position, achieving a firing position during a high-velocity maneuver. Now, the velocity is often supersonic, or it's near supersonic. There's a couple of terms that are thrown around. There's a term called transonic. None of these terms are very specific. They're sort of like general terms, and they're used sometimes appropriately, sometimes inappropriately. Nevertheless, we can say that we are going to be traveling at a very high velocity. It could be near, at, or above the speed of sound. The definition of a sonic warrior, as expressed in one of my videos, is a sonic warrior that performs air combat near, at, or above the speed of sound. Okay, so what are we doing at the perch? We're preparing ourselves. That's what we're doing. We're preparing the airplane, we're preparing our equipment, and we're preparing our mind. We're preparing ourselves mentally. Okay, what does that exactly mean? Well, we have a place, a location in time and space that we call the airborne battle space. Okay, and we are preparing ourselves to enter or to perform combat, aerial combat, within the context of this airborne battle space. Okay, fair enough. And in order to do that, we have to prepare ourselves mentally. Is that true? Absolutely. That is a requirement. We don't do this unless we can. We have the capability of preparing ourselves mentally, and we actually do so. We take the time and the discipline required to prepare ourselves mentally before we go into an engagement. Okay, so what is the perch? The perch is positioning ourselves physically and mentally in order for us to perform this particular air combat maneuver. What are we doing physically? We are getting the airplane equipped. We are getting the airplane set up, the altitude and the airspeed. The weapon systems are activated. Other things are activated as well. We have a device on the airplanes called an IFF, which is short for Identification Friend or Foe, IFF. So we make sure that our IFF system is transmitting appropriately. And by the way, those IFF codes that we put into the airplane, those are changed every day. And they come from a secret document that the fighter pilot receives prior to his or her briefing. Okay. So during the brief, we know what the IFF code is for that particular day. It changes on a daily basis. Okay, so we prepare our airplane for this combat engagement. We also prepare our minds. What exactly does that mean? Okay, that's where I want to stress in this story, which is mind prep. Okay, I want to make that an official term. Okay, mind prep. We are about to engage in a high-stakes operation. Have we properly prepared our mind to do that? Have we established an effective or an optimum mind prep? Is our mind prepared to do it? And what does that mean? First and foremost, it means that we have to concentrate and focus on what is truly important, and we have to know what is, in fact, mission critical. If we don't know what's mission critical, we are not going to be able to perform well. And in many cases, we are just simply not going to be able to perform. So I want you to begin the day as you get up in the morning and as you prepare yourself for the day's activity. It could be anything. You could be in the military, especially if you are a member of the military. I want you to get up and I want you to set yourself up on the perch. Okay, you're on the perch. You have finished your morning coffee, and maybe you have completed, or maybe you're preparing yourself for your morning run. Maybe you are having some kind of breakfast or some kind of food intake, certainly liquid intake. That's the place where we can call the perch. And this perch now is metaphorical. It's not an actual, but it is very, very similar. And that's the thing that I want to bring to the forefront here. All right? The actual position, which we call the perch, can be thought of as a metaphorical position as well. And that could be our starting point when we are, in fact, going to perform something important today. This very day. It's kind of like seize the day, which is an old Roman term. Okay? It's prepare yourself to engage the world. Prepare yourself. And what is that? Okay. Locate yourself on the perch. Know where the perch is and locate yourself on the perch. You may very well be doing some mindfulness exercises at that time. You're preparing yourself for the day, all right? So you go through your mindfulness or meditation exercises. I also say a prayer during this period of time, which is a good idea, by the way. And then go ahead and consider what is necessary, what is it that I need to do? What are the things that are, in fact, necessary for me to be able to perform well? And I want to perform well. Why? Because I want to do my best. That's my intention. My intention is to do my best every day. Where is that written down? Well, it happens to be written down in the four agreements. Okay, so if you don't know what the four agreements is, then get the book. It's pretty simple. It's an easy book. It's a short book. It's kind of like a mini book, if you will, or it's a handbook. Get the book and read it. And one of the agreements is always do your best. Okay. So Our intention is to do our best. Okay, so we have metaphorically positioned ourselves on the perch, very much like being a fighter pilot. So we're kind of thinking like a fighter pilot. And this is how you think like a fighter pilot. It's not just a fancy term. All right, this is how you think. You prepare yourself, you prepare your physical being, and you also prepare your mental being. You prepare your mind. You consider what occupies your mind at this time, and you get rid of all the baggage. You curate your mind space to prepare it so that it can perform in an optimum way. Okay, so you are preparing your mind. It's a mind prep. Okay, so you go through your morning routine, you do some meditation or mindfulness exercises. Breathing exercises are good, and there are other things that you can do. A great reference book here is The Morning Mind by the Carters, Dr. Carter and Mrs. Carter, who is also a PhD as well. So you could understand, get The Morning Mind. Okay, it's a great book. Get that for sure, and use that. All right. So you are now preparing yourselves mentally for the day. So you are located at the perch. Okay, you haven't done anything. You haven't performed anything, but you're preparing yourself to perform well. That's what the perch is all about. So do you begin your day from the perch? And you better. Now, what else can the perch give you? The perch can give you the world view. The perch can give you the big picture. The perch can give you the bird's eye view. The perch can give you the landscape. The perch can give you everything that is going on in your performance arena. Okay, that's what the perch does. The perch can do that. And understand what is going on in the performance arena. Okay, understand it. Now, make sure that, and we're going to get into this in story three a little bit further, but make sure that what you're seeing matches up to a model of reality that is based upon actual, real, and true things. Okay? Make sure what you're looking at is real. Make sure it is actually there. It is not some attempt at deception. Be very careful now here. Okay? When you are at the perch, you want to clear your mind from all debris, and you want to be able to think clearly and critically. The first order of business is for you to clarify the actual. That should be a term that you have written down in your resource handbook that you have written for yourself. All right, when you get to the perch, the first order of business after you have finished some of your morning prep in terms of meditation and stuff and breathing exercises, clarify the actual. What is actually going on? What do I know about the world? What do I know about the performance arena, the arena that I intended to perform in? Okay. In a large part of my world, a large part of my life, by the way, and most of my adult life was spent in the air. So my performance arena was actually airborne. It was not tethered to the ground. It was freely moving about the atmosphere. And sometimes it was a little bit above the atmosphere, which is It goes by a number of terms. It's not exactly space, it's subspace. It is trans space, if you will. It's actually called the tropopause. And yes, I have spent some time in the tropopause as well, and that is not in the atmosphere any longer, but it is between the atmosphere and space. There is a transition zone in the upper atmosphere that is called the tropopause, and that is basically what that means technically is that the temperature is no longer falling with altitude. Remember the adiabatic lapse rate, that's 3 degrees per thousand. So every 1,000 feet that you climb above sea level, the temperature drops 3 degrees. Okay, that's a normal, what we call the normal adiabatic lapse rate. In the tropopause, note that no longer occurs. Temperature does not drop. It actually begins to rise again. Okay, kind of a strange, amazing part of our atmosphere on this planet. It's really kind of fascinating. Okay, so you are viewing the landscape. You are considering the big picture. Don't ever, ever lose the big picture. That was one of the things that we had to insist upon as fighter pilots. You have to maintain the big picture. You must maintain the big picture. I have spoken about this before on some Throttle Up shows some years ago, the big picture. I've had a series of shows on the big picture. You can go into the archives. You can find it on our website, throttleupradio.com. You can search through that. And I would recommend that, by the way, and pull up some of those episodes that we did on the big picture thinking. All right, so the perch enables you to achieve the big picture, or to recognize the big picture. Remember, the big picture is only appropriate if we are certain that what we are looking at is real and true. Okay? It's actual, real, and true. It is, in fact, the truth. Okay? If we don't know whether or not it is the truth, there are ways for us to figure that out. We do not have to rely on chance. Is that true? Yes, it is true. Okay? If you go to the truth algorithm, you can actually Google that, and you can put that into the YouTube search bar. It's called the truth algorithm. There's a series of videos that we have produced, by the way, that enables you to discover what the truth is if, in fact, you are uncertain whether or not something is true or not true. You can actually evoke the truth algorithm to give you a much better idea, better than 50-50's guesswork, a much better analytically based idea whether or not something that claims to be true is in fact true. Okay, so you are not left alone on a sea adrift into the unknown. You have things that you can use. The truth algorithm is important for all of us. Okay, so that's the perch. The perch is the place where you begin the day. Okay? Now, exactly what should I have with me when I go to the perch? I will give you that list of things on the next show because I think that's a good follow-up. But that completes our story on the perch. Okay, the next story is Last of the Gunfighter. Okay, what does that mean? Are we talking about the Wild West? Well, not really, but it kind of is a throwback to that era in our history. Certainly, there were gunfighters during the heyday of the Wild Wild West, for sure. Okay, and they have been portrayed in lots and lots of movies, Western movies, for what? How long? For more than 50 years, maybe 60 years. I don't know how long his movie's been out. Okay, but there's an airplane that was called The Last of the Gunfighter. Really? Yeah, there is an airplane. It's still in existence, albeit it now resides in a number of museums across the country. Excuse me. And what is it? It is the F.A. Crusader. The F.A. Crusader, it was called, still is called, by the way, by many people, the Last of the Gunfighter. Why is that? Well, because the F-8's weapon system consisted primarily of guns. All right, these were, and there were four of them. They were built by Colt, and they were 20-millimeter cannons. Excuse me. Okay, so it had guns. It also had missiles, but its primary weapon system was guns, and so it was a close-in, high-velocity air combat fighter. Okay, close-in. What does that mean? Close-in means that there is no minimum range to the weapon system. That means that the weapon system is projectile and it is ballistic. Basically, it means that the weapon system is guns. Okay. Now, there was some missiles, short-range missiles aboard as well, and that was also an effective weapon system. These are sidewinders. Mostly sidewinders. There was some indication that it also carried Sparrows, but I'm not sure of that. I never did when I was flying it, and so I'm not certain of that. So just to be as honest as possible, I'm not certain that the F.A. Crusader carried Sparrow missiles. And those are radar-guided missiles. I'm just not sure of that. I don't think so, but again, I'm not sure. It did carry infrared-guided missiles, usually two. It could carry up to four. But its primary weapon system was the guns, and so it became known as the gunfighter. And the Last of the Gunfighter was when it was replaced by airplanes that didn't actually have guns. And then further on, it was replaced by airplanes that actually had guns, but as more or less as an afterthought. But what was it about the Last of the Gunfighter that was so appealing and so compelling? Not only the weapon system, but it also the performance characteristics of the airplane matched the weapon system. What exactly does that mean? Well, if you have a weapon system that can perform close in within the context of the air combat engagement, how well does the airplane perform in a high-G maneuvering environment which represents close in? How well does the airplane perform? Okay, well, the F.A. Crusader performed extraordinarily well. There's a lot of debate out there within the fighter pilot community. I would say that it was by hands down the best of the lot. Was it better than the current fighters? If you take into account the improvements in jet engine technology. Okay, jet engine technology did not remain static. It continued to improve. So you go from the engine that was powering the F.A. Crusader, the first of the gunfighters, if you will, or the last gunfighter, if you want to look at it that way. That engine was a J-57 built by Pratt & Whitney. J-57 was a very, very popular engine. It powered lots of airplanes. It happened to be the only one available at the time, okay, that the F-8 was, that this airplane was built, as well as others, all right? It was the only one available. But if you look at the advancements in engine technology, and if you put those engines in these early fighter airplanes like the F-8 Crusader, it is very unlikely that anybody could defeat those airplanes. Does that mean that the fifth generation fighters are not as good as we thought they were? Well, I'm not saying that exactly. I'm saying that the fifth generation fighter has its own strengths and weaknesses. Okay? How well does it perform? How well does it turn? How well does it accelerate? And so forth and so on. Okay, so close in-air combat. You have to have the weapon system. You have to have the airplane that can perform in a way that matches the capabilities of the weapon system. So the F-8 Crusader, or the last of the gunfighter, actually did that. It was able to do such a thing, and it did it extremely well. Okay, what exactly enabled it to do that thing? All right, I'm going to do a quick deep dive into the technological aspects, or another way of saying that, to the aerodynamics of the F-8 Crusader. Now, the F-8 Crusader was a breakthrough design. What I'm going to be talking about here is something that had never been done before. So this is American ingenuity and American innovation and creativity on full display. When you look at the F-8 Crusader in a museum now, okay, you can go, for example, and there's many great museums out there that have it. One of them that I've been to, and probably my favorite, is the USS Midway Air and Space Museum in San Diego. It's actually an aircraft carrier. The USS Midway is an aircraft carrier museum. A very popular museum. All right. On the starboard catapult, starboard means right, on the starboard catapult sits the F-8 Crusader. It's the centerpiece of all the airplanes on the flight deck. Why is that? Well, because it was a hands-down winner for the U.S. Navy in many, many ways for many, many years. Okay, so when you look at the F-8 Crusader, it's not just another airplane occupying the museum space. It wasn't just another airplane occupying the Naval Air Force at the time. It was, in fact, an example of innovation and creativity. It was an example of high levels of innovation. Lots and lots of things were done with respect to this airplane for the first time. The first thing is the wing design. Whoever designed the wing. Now, whoever designed the wing actually had access to a wind tunnel. Now, the wind tunnel was owned by NASA. Okay, so the aerodynamic engineers that designed the wing of the F-8 Crusader had access to a supersonic wind tunnel. It actually did. Okay. Given that, they were able to run a number of experiments, and they came up with this wing design. Now, the wing design on the F-8 Crusader was optimized for high-speed flight. What does that mean? It was optimized for flight at or above the speed of sound. Okay, it was optimized for that. It did not fly well slowly. Actually didn't, right? What is the minimum control speed of the FA Crusader in the clean configuration? The minimum control speed of the FA Crusader in the clean, what we call a clean configuration or the non-landing configuration, was 250 knots. All right, that was our minimum speed. What was the maximum speed? The maximum speed was something in the vicinity of 1,000. What is it? Yeah, 1.3. So 1,300 knots. So more than 1,000 knots was the terminal speed. It was also at one time the fastest aircraft in the world, the first airplane to exceed 1,000 miles per hour. Okay, so what was the wing? The wing was optimized for high-speed flight. It was actually had a sawtooth edge to it. I think it was the first time. I'm not sure. I think the sawtooth was an invention, was out-of-the-box innovation. I know that the design of the wing from the standpoint of its camber and its aspect and all the other technical features related to it with respect to coefficient of lift and coefficient of drag and all these other kinds of things. Yes, it was in fact a breakthrough design. Absolutely, it was a breakthrough design. And it was also built utilizing titanium. It was one of the first airplanes to use titanium that we ever had. So some of it was built utilizing titanium, and other parts of it were built utilizing magnesium. These are the low-stress components were magnesium in many cases, and the high-stress components were titanium. There was aluminum as well. Okay, so the wing. Now, the wing was swept at 42 degrees, and it had a dihedral. It means it drooped a little bit. It wasn't straight and level horizontally. It was actually drooped a little bit horizontally. Now, the wing actually proved to be a bit unstable. Okay, so What was the dynamic stability of the aircraft with respect to its wing? Okay, we would say that that's lateral stability from a technical standpoint. The dynamic stability of the airplane with respect to its wing was that it was either moderately or severely unstable. Okay, then how does a pilot fly such an airplane if it's moderately unstable? All right, unless the stability is improved utilizing stabilization systems or utilizing technical systems that we call stabilization systems, it would have been unflyable. Okay, it was in fact stabilized. There was a system in it which we call the roll stabilization. We shortened it for roll stab. That's typical of military jargon. It's also typical of aviation. We have these terms that only have meanings to the pilot community. We call it a roll stab, right? It was a roll stabilization system. It was a very sophisticated roll stabilization system. At the time, it was the best in the world at that point in time with respect to technological development. Okay, it utilizes, and this is going to be, I'm going to dive way down into the technical weeds here just for a second, so I'm giving you a fair warning. But for the engineers out there, The FA Crusaders role stabilization system employed the Wheatstone Bridge. Okay, what does that mean? That means that this was from a electronic standpoint. This was one of the most advanced electronic systems at the time ever built. Okay, now you can actually look up Wheatstone Bridge. You can Google it, right? It's kind of fun, all right? If you are intellectually curious like I am, go ahead and Google it, and you'll find some, wow, really? Yeah. And it, for the first time it was used. Now, not only did the airplane, not only was it designed to employ this advanced stabilization system, it also had floating aileron actuators. Now, what in the world does that mean, Kevin? Okay, I'm just going to briefly describe this because I just want to point out that when you look at the airplane, I want you to consider that almost everything here is an innovation. It's a human innovation. Human innovation was on full display. This was the height of human innovative thought, in my view. Okay, this was the pinnacle. Now, there may be other points in the landscape. There may be other mountaintops in the lands, in the intellectual landscape. And there probably is, for sure. But definitely, for this was one of the intellectual peaks in with respect to the human intellectual landscape. This aircraft employed floating aileron actuators. No fooling. What did that do? Well, it enabled precise movements. Okay, it enabled precise movements, and it also enabled the system to receive viable feedback so that it can produce the automatic control inputs necessary for stable flight. In other words, the system could sense when the airplane was becoming unstable. It could do that. This is remarkable. This is an absolutely remarkable achievement. But the system could sense when the airplane was becoming unstable and provide corrective action. It did that by this amazing stabilization system. Okay. In the landing configuration, there was also a component what we call the roll gain changer, another esoteric term, but it had that as well. And so this was a very, very sophisticated airplane technologically. It was extremely advanced for its day. There were other things that involved the controllability and the stabilization. I want to point out one thing, though. The airplane needed to be agile. Okay, so the airplane had to have high agility or high agility capability. I'm not sure I'm saying that right, but it had to be agile, highly agile. In order to do that, it could not be super stable. It had to be borderline stable to unstable. It had to be mostly unstable, which would give it to the agility. Mostly unstable, right? Some of it was neutral stability, but a lot of it was just unstable, but it, not severely so, but it was corrected by some of these stabilization systems. We had a roll stabilization system. We also had a yaw stabilization system in the airplane. The airplane did not have a pitch stabilization system, but it did have a rather sophisticated pitch control system built in to aid the pilot control inputs. It was actually an electromechanical device that was installed as well. So there was some pitch augmentation to it. Okay. All right, so That was a deep dive into The Last of the Gunfighter, the F-8 Crusader, which operated with the U.S. Navy for well over 30 years, mostly from the small deck carriers. It also operated with the French Navy for 30 years, and finally with the Philippine Air Force, flew it not from carriers, but from land base. They flew that airplane for somewhere in the vicinity of 10 to 12 years, I believe. I'm not exactly sure of the date. Okay, so that completes story number two. Story number three involves the human intellect. What is the intellectual equipment necessary? Okay, now when have you ever heard that term? Okay, not sure. It's not really used very much, and it may never been used before. I'm not really sure. I would say that it probably was and is being used. I have recently read an article in the Naval Institute Proceedings that was entitled Intellectual Readiness. Okay, so that comes close. So I would say that they were probably the first ones. But my question is this. When you get up and you're on the perch and you're preparing yourself for the day, okay, and you're preparing your mind for the day, you're organizing your mind space for the day, okay? And the day involves performing something, doing something. Often it's doing something important. Often it's doing something difficult. Often it's doing something mission critical with respect to the viability of the organization, or even up to and including the survivability of the country. Okay, the defense of the country against all enemies. Okay, could be that. It could be launching a new business operation. It could be anything, right? So you're preparing yourself for the day's activities and you're on the perch. And then you do an inventory. What is the intellectual equipment that you need in order to perform this particular activity? Okay. Why does it vary? Well, it varies for a number of reasons. Okay. If you are stationary, if your job title and your job description and the things that you do, if it is done within the context of a stationary place, you're stationary in time and space, okay? You are maybe in an office, but you're stationary. You're not moving, right? You're not on a trajectory. There's no motion involved. If you are not stationary, then the intellectual equipment that you have to have is different. Okay. Does the intellectual equipment that you have when you are in motion, will that work when you are stationary? Or is it completely different? No, it is not. It will work, okay? But it doesn't work the other way around. And this is one of the critical things about the world, about reality, okay? The things that work when you are stationary will not necessarily work when you are in motion. Why is that? That's true for all kinds of reasons. It's also theoretically true, okay? There are theories in place that pretty much prove that point. But if you are in motion, if you operate a large-scale dynamic system that moves through time and space, if you do so, what kind of intellectual equipment is necessary? Well, you better find out, okay? I have a list of things that that you can consider when you are preparing yourself to operate a large-scale dynamic system, okay, what is it? The first order of business is that you have to have with you the capability to clarify the actual. What does that mean? It means that you have learned the critical thinking model. Okay? You have learned it. Where do you learn it? You learned it from my book, Critical Thinking Essentials. You can also go other places as well. You learn it. But the first order of business is you have to be able to clarify the actual, and you have to have the intellectual equipment ready in order for you to do that, because a lot of things that are out there are not real. They're fake. They are deceptions. So you have to be able to clarify the actual. So get your equipment inventory complete before you actually leave the perch and enter into the performance arena and start performing. How much time do I have? I'm asking my audio engineer, and she's a great one, and she is telling me I have one more minute to go. So I haven't done a lot of work on the story number three. I guess I have to pick this up next week, don't I? Yep. She says, yes, I do. All right. The intellectual equipment, what is it? That's a great story starter. Okay. So start your story that way and start looking at what is the equipment that you need. Some people call it a tool. Some people call it a toolbox that you take with you, but it's all intellectual oriented. What is the intellectual equipment that you need in order for you to perform in an optimum way when you are especially performing a high-stakes operation? And I think I am at the end of the show?
Sure.
Yep. Okay. So I am at the end of the show. Here's the music. And thank you all for listening. We will see you all next week.